Is this good?
No, but I have watched it twice.
Of course you have.
And I don't know why.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Hello!
And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Sher.
Hey!
Hey!
I should do finger guns.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah. Is there anything that's making you guys mad recently?
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
I'm as mad as hell!
You've never seen me very upset.
Lord Jesus!
Oh, I'm going to start out with the rants, huh?
You got a thing, right?
I do.
You got a beef.
I do. I'm going to have to describe the situation mm-hmm. that happens in traffic, and some of our worldwide listeners may not understand everything. I'm not sure. Maybe this happens in your country, too. However, we're far too courteous.
Well, at least here in fucking Tennessee,
we are. We're far too courteous in these days. I'll explain what I mean. There are times when you are in traffic and you are driving down a two-lane road and there is traffic coming from the other side and one car wants to turn left over your two lanes that you're driving.
Mm.
Sometimes you'll be at a traffic light when this happens. Mm. And it's a perfect time, if there's room, to let that person go. But most of the time, unfortunately, there's not. And I'm sorry, if you want to turn left over two fucking lanes of traffic, you fucked up.
You should have
turned somewhere else. And that's the only thing that I can tell you right now. You should have turned somewhere else, or you should find a way to turn around so that you can turn right and not fuck everybody else's day up. But the problem is people feel like they have to let that person, because, oh, how are they ever going to turn in there if I don't let them go?
Mm.
And so there is a problem with this. We're in two lanes of traffic. One person can say, yes, you can go, but that means you have to have implied consent from the other lane
mm-hmm.
that may not even know what's going on.
Especially if you're on the inside lane, right?
Yeah. If you are on the lane that can't see the other car trying to turn, mm-hmm. you don't know a lot of right. times. This happened to me Sunday. I was driving down such a road, and there was somebody who came down and wanted to turn left into this one spot, and I was like, you should have turned at the traffic light where you can go down this road and then turn into the big shopping center.
Mm.
Not here, where I think that was mainly for people to get out and turn right onto the road, not for people to come in and turn left or whatever. So sat there, and then we're at a traffic light, and this car is coming, and they wants to turn left, and the car, two cars in front of me, wants to let this car turn. And I'm like, okay. And there's the other side, and these cars are like just moving. And it's like finally one, oh, okay, I see, you want that guy to turn. And he slows down. The car who wants to turn left then just freezes, just doesn't know mm-hmm. what to do.
Jesus.
Decides not to turn, which in turn makes both of the cars start, the other cars that are trying to let that person go, move forward slightly. Mm. Now there's an entire clusterfuck going on. Because the car turns, eventually goes, okay, I see that you're letting me go, I'll turn left now. Now some other asshole comes up behind the other guy turning left, and he's like, I want to turn left too. And just takes that opportunity to go. This is why I have a rule. I do not let you turn. No. I don't let you,
no.
ever.
No.
You have the same rule?
I want to add some addendums to this rule when yeah. he's done.
I do not let you go because I have 20 other cars behind me that are no more important than you are.
Mm.
I'm sorry if you have to turn left. I'm sorry that you fucked up and you didn't get to the right spot. But you need to find a different way to do this because this is too much traffic for you to turn left over two lanes and everything. So I have a rule. I don't let you go. And it's not me being an asshole. I'm just saying that it causes more problems than... it causes more problems than you just being courteous and everything. I understand that the whole idea is, look at how, what a nice person I am. But you aren't really that nice. I mean, you're being nice to one person and you're screwing 20 other people behind you, and you're causing a problem in traffic.
Yes. Now, I have a lot of four-way stops in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And this shows up at a four-way stop like a motherfucker. Mm. The too courteous, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know how a four-way stop works, right? Yeah. Whoever gets there and stops fully first has the right of way.
Right.
Only in the rarest of times, when you are equally identically stopped at the same exact time, does anyone ever need to wave anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But in my neighborhood, consistently, I will arrive at the four-way stop second, and this motherfucker is over here waving me to go.
Yeah.
And I'm out of spite going, no, you have the right of way. If you fucking go, traffic flows better.
Have you noticed, by the way, and this, I've seen this too. I've seen this a lot at four-way stops, so especially around the like Nashville West area, where I'll be driving from like Best Buy to PetSmart to Publix and all these other places. There's a four-way stop that's in the middle of all that.
Oh, that's a fucking clusterfuck.
Oh, it's terrible. And it's a four-way stop that where there's potentially, what, 12? There's 12 cars that could possibly be there at any one time because there's a right turn, a center, and a left lane on all of them. So like, yeah, that I'll sometimes go up to a stop sign. I know for a fact I wasn't the one that got there first, and that person at the other end would be like waving me angrily, like
yeah.
And you're like, look, even if I was first and I just kind of like didn't realize it or whatever, it doesn't require that kind of bullshit.
It's like, accept my kindness.
You're right. Accept my kindness. Exactly. But one thing I've noticed is if you try something, if you try to be aggressive, people are assholes. People will try to do stuff to prevent you from doing that. But if you're trying to be nice, people go out of their way to try to out-kind you.
Yes.
And so like there's, we get into these little gridlock type of things that happen, and it's very annoying.
Outkind you.
I agree. I was going to rant about traffic, but that was good enough. I don't think we need to go on to that anymore.
You're going
to
rant about chicken sandwiches.
I'm going to what?
Mm, oh, the way that was all trending on Twitter yesterday?
Yeah.
Fuck me. See, look, I go to Twitter to see every once in a while there's that trending story that's very important to know stuff about. But that thing yesterday where everybody was arguing about whether Popeyes or Chick-fil-A or KFC or fucking Boston Market somehow got in there.
Oh, really?
And then Wendy's joined today. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but this is yet another rant, right?
Go for it, man.
I'm tired of people thinking that there's only one way about anything.
Yeah.
And they want to argue so vehemently about it that they're willing to just willing to antagonize a ton of people over it because they have this firm rule in place that, you know, oh, well, that Popeye's chicken sandwich is so good that you can't possibly objectively say that the Chick-fil-A one is better and so forth. There was a thing the other day talking about how boneless wings weren't wings. That they're nuggets, and I bet Barrett has some thoughts on this. That
I mean, that's true, but it's not worth fighting about.
It's not worth fighting about, no. And I don't care what you call them.
Yeah.
I'm gonna fucking order those things.
Man. Yeah,
I well, go. And all those chicken sandwich brands did was sit back and cackle and benefit from all the mentions and impressions.
Oh, because you're getting free advertising.
And
man.
I had last week. I was about to rant about the fucking lunch table memes, where it's somebody will be like, "All right, which table are you sitting at?" And
they'll
lump things together in a completely haphazard way. So one of the early ones had Michael Cera at a table by himself, and his name began to trend just because that particular lunch meme had multiple people at every table, but Michael Cera off by himself. I've seen it for basketball. I've seen it for fucking pizza.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fucking tired. All you're doing is saying, what do you like?
Yeah.
But you put it in this fucking picture and people go crazy.
Yeah.
It's nuts. It makes me so angry.
The meme GIF stuff that's happening on Twitter is out of control because nobody seems to know. I mean, I think even Deadspin was a question about this. The like, there's only 10 GIFs that people use anymore. It seems like nobody seems to get in there and like find something new to represent. And you'll go through a story sometimes and you'll see like 5 or 6 of the same one all in a row and everything. Every time someone is trending that might have died but didn't, they do the Denzel Washington hand to the heart thing. Every time.
Which is from, do you know what that's from?
I don't.
I think I looked that up one time and completely forgot.
Training
it
could day? Be.
No, because he doesn't have the goatee. It's either Man on Fire, The Equalizer, the Marathon Man, Universal Soldier.
I don't care. It's an overused gift for
yes,
sure.
Yes, it is.
And I try sometimes. Now, I don't always make my own gifts up, but I try. Whenever I Google for gifts, I dive deep into the results so I can try and find something new.
That one that I tweeted the other day of John Cusack in High Fidelity was my favorite gif of all time. Because I seriously sat there, watched it over and over and over again, because he does, and I didn't realize, I recognized that part in High Fidelity, but I didn't realize how much of it was silent. Mm-hmm. And he's just literally making expressions, shame, resignation, defiance, and then like all these emotions, and then midway through he looks at the camera and just and then goes back to his like whole internal struggle. And it's very Cusackian. It's Joan and John both do this where they'll look at the camera and just like convey
It looks like John Q,
the one that I didn't
That's one Denzel I have not seen is John Q.
I don't think
it's worth it for Denzel, but it's very standard. Because it's like they don't have insurance, and the hospital is threatening to not treat his son, so he basically takes everyone there hostage until they're going to... It's basically The Negotiator, but with a sick kid in the hospital instead of like a cop accused of embezzling.
Right. It's like Inside Man, but Clive Owen is playing Denzel Washington.
It's like having... It's like taking an ocean cruise, only there's no boat, and you don't actually go anywhere.
Do you have any like another rant, like an actual rant?
Yeah, I wanted to rant a little bit about these. We've talked before about these 3-second teasers that run before trailers now.
Yeah,
where they've got to tease the trailer and how annoying this is. And we have guessed a few reasons why. And there's a dude. I'm repeating a dude on the internet claimed to be a guy that cuts trailers for a living. Did a little AMA on Reddit and said the reason for that is when they do that, there's a 300% increase in watch through. I don't know how they're getting that number, but he basically says when the trailers don't have that, 75% of the viewers drop off when it just opens with a logo. And my rant is at us. We the viewers. We tolerated this. Those of you who clicked away before this 3-second thing started happening, you're the problem.
Let me ask you a question about that. You as a user have gone to that video on YouTube to watch that trailer, right? Like, you've intentionally either clicked on it from a recommend or searched for it.
Yes.
And you've gone to that trailer.
Yes.
Why would you click off of it if you don't have that 3-second bumper?
Because I think there was that brief period when videos autoplayed on Twitter for a while, and that's when I think they cooked this shit up, because it would start autoplaying and it would show a movie studio logo and people would click away. If it autoplayed and showed you fucking The Rock falling off a building going, "Arg!" then you would go, "Oh, I gotta see that." And you would watch the rest of the trailer.
Yeah, and a lot of the times these are ads too. The trailers are ads. So you wanna...
But they do this for regular trailers too, right?
They do. But they just, what they do is they upload the trailer with a 3-second preview, then they tell YouTube also make this an ad and run it in front of other people's videos.
So the whole idea, and this is, I mean, this is sort of harkens back to the YouTube creator playbook and everything, that you need to draw people's attention within the first 10 to 15 seconds or else people click off. And so the same thing goes for trailers, because the green band of trailer, unless it says rated R for hardcore nudity, then, you know, people are just going to be like, movie trailer, screw that, and leave it. So yeah, you have to do, it's like how a movie will play the middle of it sometimes in the beginning, so that, because all the boring conversation shit is really what starts the movie. So they have to go to do this thing where it's like, you know, you know, I thought everything was great 3 weeks ago.
How did I get here?
Yeah, that bullshit.
But your rant is about us.
But it's our fault. It's the viewer's fault.
For that, just what you said, right?
Hey, yes. You know, when you point that way to them, there's another finger pointing back at you.
And when you make assumptions,
four more, right?
You make an ass out of you. Yeah. Assumption. Yeah, no, I just wanted to rant about the, it really drives me crazy, and it's not going to stop anytime soon because they have the data. And the data says that we're all a bunch of mindless blobs from the movie WALL-E, and we can be pushed around by technology.
I really do hate that 3 second bumper, though.
I really do too. Hate it. It's really, I mean, what it says to me, I don't know who it appeals to. I'm sure it obviously does somebody, but what it says to me is, you are stupid. That's what I think every time I see that.
Yeah.
You are dumb.
Yeah, and I mean, when it applies to ads, I understand it when it applies to ads.
Mm-hmm.
That makes perfect sense. But what I'm talking about is why they do it. I guess they just don't want to recut it.
They need to make two versions of it at that point.
Yeah, I mean, just lop off that 3 seconds, basically. If you go intentionally to that thing, I want to see the trailer. Like, when we do our fall movie preview, probably next week, we're going to watch a lot of trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to... You say 3 seconds, but I think some of them are a little bit longer.
Yeah,
it seems like
3 longer.
To 5, 6, something like that. That adds up over time.
Yeah,
it does.
I don't need to waste my time with that. I'm going to just watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Did you know, Jeremy?
I didn't.
That the 2019 Video Music Awards were the day that this episode comes out.
I did not. That's only like six days away.
Chris watches the MTV station a lot.
Watch MTV Live almost every morning, and ads are constant, but because I tune them out.
Yeah.
I don't know when I never know when it's supposed to play, and I'm just like, oh, it must be right around the corner.
I know. So what is the point of all that advertising? Because people are going to tune it out, right?
Mm.
My point is that even if you're not plugged in and watching the station and stuff like that, and you know, people do and don't consume MTV anymore in different avenues and stuff like that. But like, it used to be, and this is not a nostalgic rant, I'll qualify that. It used to be that MTV was larger than the channel itself. It was in the public consciousness.
Ooh.
Like you knew, just like the Grammys or the Oscars or stuff like that, you knew when the VMAs were, right? And if you had a passing interest in music videos or even just pop culture writ large, because it was billed on performances. It's what the Grammys have moved to now, rather than the awards, is moving to the performances. The VMAs have always been about performances of that year, the culturally relevant things, and some mashups, meaning that, you know, Run DMC is going to play with Aerosmith or something like that, you know, that kind of thing. Taylor Swift is going to play with Katy Perry, you know what I mean.
I do.
It had.
I'm gonna TiVo that shit.
It is now sunk into cultural irrelevance, even for somebody like me who is as deeply plugged into this sort of subject as possible. I've watched it every year since I think 1994, and it has become unwatchable now.
The VMAs or the channel as a whole?
The VMAs. The channel itself is fine. Like I enjoy the music videos.
I have questions.
Yeah.
Did the internet and the age of YouTube kill MTV's relevance?
No.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Or was MTV only really ever relevant for us, our generation, Gen X and the one that came behind us? And that's why the only shows they ever put out that are successful are Real World ripoffs, which I gravitate towards, or shit like, hey, let's do The Hills again 12 years later.
Yes.
Or whatever that new show is called. It's not The Hills.
It's
The Hills Revisited.
It's The Mountains.
Yeah.
My point is, my greater point is, I think Gen X is largely to blame. My generation is largely to blame for all of this reboot, revisitation, nostalgia bullshit.
That's a part of it. Sure.
Because it's almost all coming from that era of the shit we grew up with.
Yeah, the stuff now. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's because they're not going to reboot 120 minutes, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. They're not going to reboot the early MTV raps. Actually, I think they did try to reboot.
They rebooted TLR. TRL?
Yeah.
They made it TLR. Total live request.
Well, but it just didn't work.
Too long, red.
Because the people who would watch TLR would be kids after school. They don't watch MTV anymore. The people who used to watch it after school are grown-ups. They have kids now. They have jobs now.
MTV as a brand, though, is much larger than the channel itself.
But I don't. But my point is, it is shrunk.
The channel itself, yes. Of course, in that medium, too, because it's not streaming on anything else but its own service. You know, Spotify has made audio more attractive than actual music videos. YouTube has made it, you know, commercially or universally, you know, accessible. You don't have to go to MTV. You don't have to wait for the credits to show
up. Taylor Swift is not making videos like that she's making where she's spending millions of dollars on them for MTV.
No. No.
She's making them for maybe awards, but mostly for the ad revenue she's going to get on YouTube when she uploads it to YouTube.
Correct. Correct. So MTV, just like Rolling Stone, just like Spin, Stereo Gum, all those guys have to be evolving into much more of a facilitator rather than like the landing spot, rather than the hosting platform. And my point about the VMAs in particular is that was really the last place where you could get everything kind of in a programmed, controlled environment. I'm doing air quotes, but like to where you could say, like, this is a reasonable summation of the year in music from all the different genres, some little crossovers that are fun. But basically the performances are there. You can say like, oh man, I forgot that came out this year. And oh yeah, wow, that's cool. You know, the performances are good. Now there's really nothing like that. The Grammys certainly aren't that. The Grammys gravitated to more, after David Wilde actually got involved with producing the show, they got more to the VMA side of things. And really, you don't have this huge coalition of groups and acts and bands at anything but like iHeart Radio Festival, which gets a ridiculous amount of bands, but it's overkill. It's too much. It's over like 3 days. So, yeah, I want a 2.5-hour chunk to say, here was the year in music and music videos.
And you don't think it's going to be that this year, or you just think that people have stopped caring and that means something?
I don't think it's going to be that this year, because it hasn't been for the last 5 years at least.
But Taylor's coming back.
Taylor's coming back, and I'm going to watch it. I watch it every year. And Missy Elliott's going to have a performance because she's getting the Video Vanguard. But I don't think it's going to be anything like what conceptually I think an award show should be in that vein, which is very much like the Oscars. Here's the year in movies. You know, obviously you're not going to have performances besides the best song and stuff like that, but you know, here is what took place over the last 12 months, and certainly not that anymore.
Not related really to your VMA thing, but to the conversation you guys were having about why MTV went from videos to mostly reality shows and everything. I really think that ultimately they made that decision because the reality shows were doing so much better than music videos, not that music videos were doing bad on their own. And I don't think it was because, oh, well, if we play this, we can't be profitable or anything. It's just that they found out that they were so much more profitable when they did that. And plus, remember what it was like when you'd watch videos in the 80s and 90s. There would be usually a 3-song block, and sometimes it would be stuff you weren't with. And if you got a song you didn't like, and then maybe another song you didn't like, then you're turning it off. Whereas an hour long of, you know, the Jersey Shore or whatever, those are some characters that a solid audience likes and enjoys for an entire hour, doesn't turn away from the TV. And there's no doubt that that's probably where that came from. Them stopped playing music videos so much because, and you know, TRL, they did bring it back, but it was like the even more bastardized version of it.
It's terrible.
Remember the one with Carson Daly and everything? I think they would occasionally play videos beginning to end, even though they would cut them off a lot of times, which is really annoying. But the bastardized version of it cut every music video, I think, that would play. Like, they'd play just a snippet of it, and it's like, ha ha, that's a great song, isn't it? Let's talk about some other bullshit. You know, because I think they realized that not everybody likes that song. Only a certain group of people. It's like the Why Your Team Sucks and Deadspin, right? You know, there's a few people who like that, but not everybody does. So let's play a snippet But the people who are watching know, oh, I don't have to watch this whole thing because it'll be done. And they'll be talking about stuff that is near and dear to me.
Mm.
And it sucks because I like hearing all the songs. There are songs that I will listen to every morning that I hate, and but it's a good background thing while I'm trying to get woke up in the morning
So I could sit next to Carson Daly and Fred Durst and talk over who's you to first. All right, what are we doing now?
Recommends and warns?
What do you got?
Totes amaze balls.
They're great.
It won the Academy Award.
Oh, for what?
For best movie ever made.
Can I go first on the recommends?
Go for it.
Because I want to see if you guys have seen this. Have you watched The Righteous Gemstones yet?
I have not.
The first episode?
No, I was going to wait and see what people said.
Okay, well, I'm about to say something.
Considering that I like Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals and all that, I'll probably end up watching it.
Yeah. So I watched two HBO pilots / first episodes this week.
Mm-hmm.
Succession and The Righteous Gemstones.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the same premise. Powerful family, lots of money. Family squabbles dynamics between the patriarch and the kids. Right?
Now, Succession isn't brand new.
No, it just started its second season.
Okay. I just want to make sure the listeners knew that these weren't both brand new shows. Righteous Gemstones just premiered.
Just happened last week as of this posting. Have you guys seen any of Succession?
I have not.
No.
Okay.
I heard somebody else talking about this show over the weekend.
It's interesting. I heard the same thing. And, if you get a second season on HBO, typically, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
It's got good people in it. Brian Cox is really good. Yep. You got Kieran Culkin in there. You got a bunch of people that I don't know about, but
Dude from Pride and Prejudice is in this. The Kira ends up with in that movie. Only he doesn't have old-timey clothes on.
I haven't gotten to that.
I swear to God, he's in that show.
Yeah. I don't know if he was in the pilot.
He may be just in season two then. One. I don't know.
So I'll start with Succession. I didn't like it. I didn't like it because, by the way, both of these, another similarity is that they're all assholes. Everybody's an asshole in this. One is the leader of a big televangelist type of empire, and the other is the Brian Cox character in Succession is the leader of a media conglomerate, very much like, Turner or Fox or mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in Succession, everybody's an asshole and like, an unrepentant, eventually they may become repentant, but like, I couldn't root for anybody in that show.
Yeah.
Like, even like Kieran Culkin is like the kind of like casual, like freewheeling libertine type of cat that's like, well, I'm rich and everything, but like, I don't need all this shit. He's an asshole too.
Oh.
The whole family's assholes.
Oh.
And the lead asshole is such an asshole that I can't penetrate that ass. So I didn't go any further in Succession, even though there's a whole thing out there. I know it's got a rabid fan base. I know that there's a lot of people that like it, unless somebody gets on there and tells me that, oh yeah, no, this character really turns a corner and everything. From what I understand from reading, I don't think they do. So I don't feel like I'm gonna continue on that road.
The guy's name is Matthew McFadden.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Righteous Gemstones, on the other hand, is Danny McBride and Jody Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Danny McBride wrote and directed the first episode. And it's John Goodman. It's Adam Devine. It's Devine, right?
I think so.
And Danny McBride and a whole bunch of other people that you recognize. And it's hilarious.
Hmm.
Oh, Dermot Mulroney. Yes, he's a rival pastor.
Hey, there you go.
This show is right up your alley, by the way. Yes,
yeah.
Because Eastbound, did you like Eastbound and Down?
Yes,
but
with an asterisk.
What's the asterisk?
I didn't like it that much.
The cringe?
I liked it more when it was about him trying to get back in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And when they went down to Mexico for an entire season, I lost interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
They definitely ran out of material on that whole thing.
This is that kind of Pineapple Express type of thing where it's like, madcap and people are hard to root for and everything. Like Seth Rogen in Pineapple Express is, you know, your protagonist, but then he's, when he gets back together with Chica, she's like, oh, I want to get married. Oh, yeah. I made a mistake. It's that kind of thing where it's funny enough where I can root for these guys. I cannot wait to see more of this stuff. Okay. John Goodman is fucking awesome.
It got really good ratings. Yes. We'll have to see.
So it looks like Walton Goggins is going to be in this show. Mm-hmm. And it looks like Skylar Gazando, the guy you brought up from Vacation, is in this as well.
These guys like working with the same people.
Yeah.
Huge recommend for Righteous Gemstones. Cautious Recawarn for Succession.
All right. Okay. All right. All right. Good call.
Okay.
Good call.
I'm going to recommend The Hate You Give.
Oh, I keep passing this on the dial, and I'm curious, but I haven't taken the plunge.
If you are a Blind Spotting fan,
ooh,
this is a great compliment to that movie.
Fuck? You just sold me.
However, there's no like, you know, awesome rap thing that happens in this, but it's this. It's got this. It's sort of the same topic, and it's this girl who lives in a poor neighborhood, but her family's worked hard enough to have her go to private school. And she talks about at the very beginning of it how she has to act one way in one neighborhood and she has to act another way at the private school, which is mostly white. Mm. And so then there's a point where she goes to a party and she meets some guy that she's known since childhood and everything. It's a guy who has suddenly started dealing drugs because he's got a lot of different things going on in his life. But they're childhood friends. They've known each other forever. They get into a car. He pulls off to the side and he says something to the effect that I've always liked you. And, you know, like, he tries to kiss her and she's like, no. And he's like, okay, well, you know, we have plenty of time, blah, blah, blah. He gets back onto the road and then they see the blue and red lights flashing in the back. And because of some, you know, awful bullshit type of stuff, that guy she's talking to ends up getting shot.
Hmm.
Because of he reaches into his car while he's supposed to be like with his hands up against his car. He reaches down in his car to get a hairbrush.
Hmm.
As soon as he gets the hairbrush, he gets shot. And so the movie is essentially about her struggle, trying to keep sort of anonymous in this whole thing. Like the cops know that she was there, and there's detectives who are you know, investigating the whole incident and everything. They know she's there, but she's not being named on the news yet or anything like that. So she's still trying to have to like play these roles when she's at home and when she's at the private school. And much like the guy in Blind Spotting has, she has white friends who like to act black. Mm. And there's a one her best friend who's played by Sabrina Carpenter, who you may run across.
She was in Girl Meets World and is now a big pop star.
Yeah, she's they're on the same basketball team. And a lot of the things that she used to just kind of like accept as part of her start becoming a little bit more like, you know, when she starts acting black, it's like, wait a minute. Then now I see this in a completely different light. Ooh. Because you don't actually understand anything about how it's like to be black and mm-hmm. everything. And, there's a moment where the whole school, like basically, I don't know who leads the charge, but the whole school essentially is like, hey, let's like cut class and like, protest about that black guy that got shot and everything. And nobody knows this dude. Nobody knows that she knows this dude. And they're all going out like, hey, we just thought it would be a good way to cut class and everything. And the main character walks out and she sees like everybody just like cutting up, having fun. They had the little like, you know, the pictures of the dude and everything, making it look like this is all about some big protest. And she just starts breaking down and starts realizing that, you know, a lot of this stuff isn't cool. I don't want to go too much farther into it because, you know, you do want to like get into this movie on your own and everything. But this movie is great. It is another movie that came and went in 2018. I'm not sure how big of a release it had. Mm. I remember it coming out. I actually bought it, but I saw it on HBO. Hmm. And it is an unbelievable compliment to Blindspotting. Hmm. Like, it's got a lot of the same themes, a lot of the same things, but it's told with a different kind of perspective that maybe you didn't, if you didn't get something in Blindspotting, you'll get it here.
Man, I'm all over this. I've seen Blindspotting about 5 times now. Mm-hmm. And my wife is watching it tonight.
Oh yeah,
nice.
She's got a friend that she likes to watch movies with, and I have finally pushed this to the top of her stack.
Nice.
Because I came in the room and she's like, I was reading this book, blah 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 blah, and she goes on to talk about how white people, the book she's reading is about how white people don't really understand what the black experience is like. Mm-hmm. And I like cut her off. I was like, you need to watch Blindspotting. That's what the whole movie is about.
But yeah, this is The Hate U Give. The star of this is a girl named Amanda Stenberg. She's fantastic in it. Regina Hall is in this.
Really?
Great. She's had a renaissance recently.
No kidding,
she's
man.
Been in a lot of stuff. Anthony Mackie plays a drug lord in this, and Issa Rae is in this also.
Holy shit, that's a good cast.
Also Russell Hornsby, who plays her dad, and there's a whole thing at the very beginning. This movie will wrap you up right at the beginning of it, because it's their father telling all three of the kids that live with them, this is what you do if I get pulled over by a cop. And this is what you three need to do when this happens, and it'll wrap you up immediately, and you'll just be like, oh god, and it just sucks you in for the rest of it. The Hate U Give.
Nice.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, I'm gonna hit you with a solid record warn.
All right.
I have watched this movie twice now over the last year and a half for reasons. It's a 2012 movie called Disconnect.
Okay.
And it stars Jason Bateman. Frank Grillo is in it. Hope Davis plays Jason Bateman's wife. A couple other faces that you'll recognize in this movie. And I swear this is the most Paul Haggis movie that Paul Haggis never made. it feels like somebody saw Crash and said, I want to make a similar vignette style movie where all the characters somewhat intersect. Only instead of race, this will be about technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the basic premise, all right? So Jason Bateman's kid, lonely nerd at school. He is talking to this girl, Jessica, on Face Smash or whatever they call it in this movie. and they're talking about how both their parents are shitty and yada, yada, yada. Well, what he doesn't know is Jessica is a fake profile run by two other kids in this guy's school. And it's just kind of a lark. And at one point, they send him like a photo they steal off the internet of a girl's bare midriff and kind of pulling her underwear down. They go back to playing video games. This is the central story. There are about 6 stories in this movie, and they all cross up. So then the next day, they send him a thing, and they're like, well, maybe I guess you didn't like that picture that I sent you. Maybe you don't feel the same way about me. And after a little bravery, he gets up and goes to his bathroom. Takes a picture of himself naked. He writes in lipstick on his inner thighs, love slave. Sends it back. They, of course, because they're movie bullies, send it to the entire school. And the kid basically tries to hang himself.
Oh, shit.
Now, the kid that tries to hang himself, Jason Bateman's kid. Hmm. Jason Bateman is torn up about it. The bully kids, their dad is Frank Grillo. And he's a digital forensic psychologist. He used to be a computer FBI cop, and now he helps people who've been victimized online. And his clients are Paula Patton and Alexander Skarsgård, who had all their money stolen because, this is great, it's neither one of their faults. They're both dicks. Alexander Skarsgård was secretly going to gambling websites and clicked a link he shouldn't have. And she, Paula Patton, was talking to some guy on social media, and they were flirty, and she clicked a link she shouldn't have, and the dude stole $9,000 or whatever. So the entire movie, they're trying to track this guy down, and Frank Grillo was their specialist helper guy, yada yada. There's a whole other story about a newswoman who wants to push up the ladder, and she's got an idea to do a story about teenagers who sell sex online.
Mm.
Somehow meets one of them, I honestly don't remember. And she promises, I'm going to interview for your story. We'll blur out your face. We'll change your voice. No one's ever going to know it's you. what do you think? He's like, all right, okay, as long as nobody ever knows. Do the story. CNN loves it. You're getting called up to CNN and the big leagues now. You're a real reporter now. Mm. yeah. And Jason Bateman is her lawyer.
Yeah, of course.
That's how much thought was put into the intertwining of these stories. Now, Jason Bateman is eventually going to find out that it was Frank Grillo's kid that bullied his son in a suicide attempt. He's going to go over there, and he is going to hit that kid in the face.
Mm. The kid, not Frank Grillo.
Well, on accident. he and Frank Grillo are fighting on the lawn, and the kid comes up, and he turns, and I think there's plenty of time for him to know, but he still hits the kid. And it's this weird think piece. Like almost what I want to do now is watch Traffic, because I bet you it's just as silly as this movie played to me, because this is just like melodramatic. There's all these long takes of like Jason Bateman, like furrowing his brow, looking at his son's iPad, and it's just
Traffic or Crash.
Oh, did I say Traffic?
Yeah.
Crash.
Well, I mean, Traffic's not that far off.
Well, yeah,
either.
I mean, that's why it seemed like it could be.
You're right, though. Yeah. I didn't mean Crash. Crash, but with technology instead of racism.
Is this good?
No, but I have watched it twice.
Of course you have.
And I don't know why.
Like, it looks like the newswoman is Andrea Riseborough.
It is. Yeah, that is who it is.
Who's in Oblivion and Birdman.
Oh, is she the, are you still a good team, Jack, or whatever? She's
the
redhead?
Yeah, she's the fake wife of Tom Cruise in Oblivion.
I didn't remember that being her.
Is she Michael Keaton's love interest in Birdman?
She's the one who says she's pregnant at
right,
the beginning.
Okay.
Also, this will be relevant to the movie ad later. Casey Lemons is in this movie as well.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know how much of a role she has in it, but she's in it. So
who's Casey Lemons? Lemons.
She plays someone named Roberta Washington.
She is an FBI agent.
FBI agent.
who's Jason Bateman's sister?
Well, because they want to. Jason Bateman actually has a cool scene when he realizes the reporter's lying, and he's her lawyer, and he basically says, "Yeah, you're going to need a new lawyer," and he walks out.
By the way, I saw Cher.
What'd
from last week and everything. That movie's frustrating to me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, no, I think it's good in, you know, like I liked it, but it's a frustrating movie because I know why they did that. Like they didn't want to have a full on, like, here's what happened.
Yeah.
They wanted to have the character always just sort of be in the dark about it. But it's interesting that you watch this and then Cher, and they both kind of have some similar.
Yeah.
Type of things, even though, you know, Cher is a more serious topic, but the idea of being in school and having your embarrassments sent throughout the entire school and everything is something I'm glad we never had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an entirely different thing. Like, remember, I mean, you sit there and think about the stuff you did in high school. Like, aren't you glad that isn't like being sent everywhere?
Yeah, you see it all in movies now, and you see it actually really in real life. I see this all the time. Like, any sort of confrontation, any sort of thing that's unusual, everybody whips out their phone. And so somebody's going to have something of aberrant behavior. And imagine that at school when you know the people and you can send other people that know that person, all that shit. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's
man, there was this kid in my middle school.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Ezra.
Mm-hmm.
He was mean
mm-hmm.
and skinny. And I would pay good money to be able to watch a YouTube video of him beating the shit out of that kid in the gymnasium that one day. Because it was awesome. That kid was twice as tall as Ezra, and he picked on him too long, and then Ezra snapped. He was like fucking Tasmanian devil.
Nice. He beat the shit out of him?
Oh, yeah. And see, you're right. If that happened today, it would be on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. And it would be all kinds of things.
I also watched this Lifetime movie because the movie I was watching was making annoying noises, and my wife came in and said, can you change the channel? I wasn't paying attention. I was waiting for another movie to come on, and it was just the end of some screechy sci-fi thing. So I flipped over to Lifetime, and it was this movie about a girl who suddenly gets to 100,000 Instagram followers. But it's not Instagram. It's Instapixie. And she immediately has a violent stalker. It's like the next day she's got a violent stalker. And I had to go in an hour later. I go in and tell my wife off, and I was like, I forgot all about changing the channel back, and now I'm wrapped up in this goddamn Instagram movie because this movie is so bad, it's making the both of the guys who it could be look like it's him. Like, the movie can't even give me one over the other so that I'll know it's actually the one you're like, just like playing it so weak. I had to watch just to find out which one was the actual.
Mm-hmm.
It was the coffee shop guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for the spoiler.
She knew him all along.
What was the name of the movie? Mother, May I Sleep with a Barista?
my stalker, my daughter's stalker.
Oh, of course, yeah. And they would never have like some like awesome title. It would be like, you know, everything is about every title is what the movie's about.
My daughter's stalker.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, if it's always
I fucked my best friend.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So the movie Disconnect is a Wreck-A-Worn.
There's something there. I've watched it twice. It's not utter shit, but it's not great.
That's got a good cast. You buried the lead about Paula Patton and Alexander Skarsgård.
I did, sort of, yeah. I was trying to trick
Well, it sounds out. Like the movie almost buried the lead,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, it doesn't really, like Crash, it doesn't really have any more conclusions at the end than it had in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not a good idea to bully people with online nude pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
I think probably not a good idea to beat up children.
Mm-hmm.
They could have called this movie Really Bad Decisions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. If it was on Lifetime.
Yeah, that would be a Lifetime thing.
Okay, yeah, it's time to talk about Mubi.
Woohoo!
Mubi!
There are a lot of great things on Mubi right now.
Yeah.
I was immediately drawn to a little 30-minute documentary called Dutch Angle. Chaz Gerritsen and Apocalypse Now.
Fascinated by this.
And it's a guy who was the photographer on the set of Apocalypse Now and took all these pictures. And the pictures themselves are in the Netherlands, like, photo museum or something like that. I don't know what the actual place is called. Apparently, and I saw this at the end of the movie, only 15% of the photos he shot were in the movie.
Oh.
So, like, it sort of serves as a function, like, if you ever find yourself in the Netherlands,
yeah,
because these pictures are amazing.
Yeah.
These pictures are great. And a great compliment to, like, stuff like Hearts of Darkness and everything like that, if you've ever seen that documentary about the filming of Apocalypse Now, because he's got this Chaz Gerritsen guy has got some stories about each actor, and he's... Basically, his process was he was taking shots of things that didn't actually happen in the movie. He staged a lot of his things. So he had Dennis Hopper doing something.
He actually staged photographs.
He staged photographs. Okay. So, like, there's stuff in there. You see some of the photos and you're like, okay, well, that didn't happen in the movie. Like, yeah. There's a scene of Dennis Hopper getting shot by somebody. he has some stories about Coppola. He said Coppola came up to him and he said, I had a dream about you last night where I was hanging by your camera straps 30 feet out of my apartment window. And then he left. and Gerritsen said something like to the effect that I just had the feeling that since I was sort of on probation, they gave him a 30-day period where, like, if you screw up, we'll get somebody else or whatever. He's like, he was just trying to get me on edge and everything. And then sure enough, at the end of the 30 days, Coppola came up to him again and said, you know, I really don't like you, but you take really good photographs. Nice. And then left.
I think I would rather hear the opposite. Like, your photos are bad, but I really like you, kid.
Yeah, right? But it's funny because he goes through all these things. He's talking about how Dennis Hopper really took a lot of direction well in the photographs that he took and everything. And he's like, the other gentleman did not. He's talking about Marlon Brando.
Oh, shit. Does he have some shots of Brando?
Yeah, there's some. He gives some story about when Brando gets to the set and everything, and like all the different things that he did during the shooting and everything. I don't want to ruin everything. Yeah, it's a 30-minute documentary. Yeah. But he talks about Brando. He talks about Martin Sheen. He talks about a couple of others that were on there. Robert Duvall.
Oh yeah.
And looking at the photographs is fascinating. Listen to him talk about the things that he went through on that set. is very interesting. And like I said, huge, huge compliment to Hearts of Darkness, if you've ever seen that, and if you're a big Apocalypse Now fan, which 40 years old.
Yeah, it just got a re-release, right?
Yeah, it's got some new Coppola final. I mean, there's probably like 15 cuts of this movie now.
There's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, drawn to that very, and that is a extremely high recommend. That's on Mubi. Will be on Mubi when this is released and everything. Another one that I saw, actually, I rewatched The Limey.
Oh, nice.
The Steven Soderbergh movie that really was at in the middle of the sort of the height of Soderbergh.
Yep.
He had done Out of Sight. Limey came next. And then he was on. He's about to do Traffic and Aaron Brockovich and Oceans and all that.
Yeah, it's a hell of a run.
Yeah, in the middle of that is The Limey, which is a movie that was sort of like not very many people saw it either.
Nobody talks about it.
Yeah, and I was surprised a little bit to see on the IMDb this had a 7.0. Like what? I felt like it was a little bit higher than that. Rewatching it, I can see where some of that, like maybe some negative could creep into your thoughts, but I very much enjoyed The Limey.
Fuck yeah.
Terrence Stamp just completely steals, like, I mean, it's his movie, but he completely just steals this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's his to take, and he runs with it. And I think it's the Cockney rhyming slang and stuff like that where it's funny, he'll say some stuff and he expects other people to know, you know, like he'll say something like, yeah, that guy was my China. And she's like, China, what do you mean? China plate, mate.
That's in Oceans.
Yeah.
It's Bonnie Rubble. Trouble.
Yeah.
You're in Bonnie.
Luis Guzman is great in this. If there was anybody who could steal the movie like from Terrence Stamp, it's Luis Guzman.
Well, and so Peter Fonda's in this.
Yeah. Right? Peter Fonda's in this, yeah.
Another good reason to revisit it, you know, if you're thinking about him, because he recently died, but he's good in this. I don't think it's like a standout performance, but...
No, it's you know, he's sort of almost playing... He's playing some callbacks to Easy Rider in this a little bit. But he's an evil guy in this.
He's slimy.
Yeah, he's a really, really bad guy. Yeah.
He's like oily and like just like the smile is pervasive.
Yeah, like there's even a point where he Luis Guzman is talking to Terrence Stamp and Stamp is talking about how that when and Melissa George plays Terrence Stamp's daughter in this. He relates a story that like when Melissa George walked in the room, Peter Fonda would beam and everything, and he's like, "Say, man, I've talked to that guy for like years now, and he never smiled at me," you know. And it's basically, you know, that just more to that Peter Fonda character. He smiled because she's hot,
yeah,
and he's got some other girl in this that's smoking hot too. Mm. The story is essentially his daughter has been killed. He's found out about it. He's pissed and he's basically just on a revenge run. And that's what's so kind of like liberating about watching this movie. He's not really worried about getting caught or dying or anything like
rescuing
that.
Rescuing anybody. Yeah.
Right. He's just going in and he's like, I want names. I want to find the guy and I want to kill him. And
there's that one great shot too, where he goes into like a garage and the camera stays outside and you just hear all the pop, 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 as he's going through there killing all the fools.
Yeah, because he comes in and he's wanting the name. Peter Fonda's name is Valentine. And he wants this name from this like warehouse or whatever. He goes in and immediately just like starts like attacking the boss of the place. And then all of his heavies come around and they start beating him up. And then they're like basically just throw him out to the sidewalk and say, well, you know, don't ever come back here. Like, if you're going to trespass next time, we'll love that, man. You see people high-fiving and crap. And then he gets up from the sidewalk and just walks back in with his gun. And you just, pop, pop, pop. Hey, man. Boom, boom, boom. The Limey is a fantastic movie. And you know, like I said, it's in the middle of that Soderbergh run there where he had all these great movies. That editing style, and I don't remember the name of his editor, but there's a lot of that, you know, where somebody will be talking and sometimes it'll cut away while, you know, it'll cut to the person talking, but they're not talking anymore.
Yeah.
And, but there, you can still hear the dialogue, and yeah, it'll come back, and then he's
like
talking.
An Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eyes Wide.
It's like the
out,
like,
of sight. Out of sight.
Yeah.
Out of sight.
That bar make love scene is all shot like that.
Yeah. And there's scenes where, you know, like, he'll cut in like shots of his daughter when she was way younger and like, you know, 6 years old and everything. And, he's got that interesting editing style going on. I don't think he stuck with that over the years, but that's a sort of a highlight of the period that he was working in and everything.
It's interesting. Sarah Flack was the editor on that film. She also did Lost in Translation and a bunch of weird stuff.
But not much Soderbergh?
No. Well, she did Full Frontal. So okay. She was around in that.
You can probably just say that Soderbergh wants this certain way, and he tells the editor to do it that way, and that's how it comes out and everything. But really interestingly, you know, shot and edited in that way.
Yeah.
I would say that movie alone is worth the price of a month of Mubi.
Dude, all right. If you've waited until now to sign up for Mubi, you've got the movie that Chris was talking about, the Apocalypse Now documentary with the photographs. You've got the Limey. You've got a movie called Eve's Bayou,
which is great too.
Yes,
I saw that for the first time with this service.
Really?
Yeah. I remember I was at a theater that played this, and I never got to see it. This is one of the best Samuel L. Jackson performances that you have never seen.
Yeah. Yeah, he's amazing in this.
It's not his movie, really. I mean, all the stuff that really happens is because of him. But a very young Journey Smollett is the child actress in this, and Megan Good, who's like 16, is in this.
Yeah.
But it's about how she gets annoyed at a party that they're having, and they're this very wealthy New Orleans. I don't know if it's New Orleans. It's Louisiana for sure. Yeah. They're very wealthy Louisiana. You know, he's a doctor, and they come from a long line of like the, you know, like socialites or whatever and everything. The Batiste family. Journey Smollett gets really annoyed at the party, and she runs off to some sort of like boathouse or something like that, or some house that's apart from them. And she falls asleep and then is awakened by her father and a woman that's not her mom making out and about to have sex. And it sort of sets these wheels in motion about like what a bastard Samuel Jackson is in this movie, and a child's perspective of things, and like, you know, what they don't realize, the things that they say can have a lot of consequences and everything. The movie is gorgeous.
Is there a resolution, like a definitive resolution at the end of this, or was it kept open?
It's kept open.
Okay.
Yeah. They give you two sides of a story that happens, and they don't tell you which one's the definitive
one. I remember that being the case. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Casey Lemons, who is she's an actress. I knew her mostly as the best buddy of Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs. And I think she's also in Fear of a Black Hat.
Oh, yeah?
I think she's the reporter in that. But Casey Lemons, this is a great movie. I would highly recommend that one, and go to Mubi. It'll still be there when we post this.
This is the time to do it. You get 30 days free. 30 days free. 10 years. 30 days. So go to Mubi.com/CinemaSins. You get 30 days free only when you go to that URL. So Mubi.com/CinemaSins, and you get all this stuff and more. There's so much stuff. There's an interesting movie called Venus and Fur that I don't have time to get into right now, but it's very interesting. You should check it out, among many, many other things. So try it out. It's awesome. Mubi.com/CinemaSins. I've got another one. A solid recommend.
Ooh, baby.
And it's on Netflix, and you should watch this today.
Oh.
While your wife is watching Blind Hate, you should be watching The Legend of the Drunken Master.
Oh, ooh, Jackie Chan.
Yes.
I've seen this.
Yeah, have you seen it?
This is from like the 70s, right?
No, you've seen The Drunken Master.
Okay.
You've seen the original one.
Yeah.
This is the sequel to it. It's actually in Hong Kong and in China, it's Drunken Master 2.
And when was this one
made? This was 1994.
Okay, never mind. This is the one.
Yeah, this is the one I've seen. This is amazing.
I remember loving it all.
If you okay, so it's weird to say that Jackie Chan's prime was in the early to mid 90s. But that's
here
when,
in America.
That's when American audiences got exposed to him. He was pushing 40 when he was making this movie. The guy looks like he's 25, just from a muscular build and just like the stuff that he does in this. Now, I love Jackie Chan. I've watched a lot of Jackie Chan. I've watched some of his Hong Kong stuff. I watched some of his, you know, latter day American stuff. This is, I think, the peak of his powers, both as a performer, he co-directed this, and as a choreographer. I have never, ever, ever seen the shit that they do in a movie from 1994 still. So the whole thing is that there's a drunken style of boxing, right? That if you do different moves where it looks like you're literally drunk, and or if you get drunk and make these moves, then you're able to channel a certain fighting style that is almost impenetrable, right? Impenetrable. And he's the master of this. And when he finally shows off what this style can do, it's unlike anything that you've ever seen. So, again, I thought I was just having fun with it. And my son was watching it with me. It was a lot of fun. And then I looked online, and, like, this movie is universally praised. And, like, Roger Ebert said that the final fight is one of the most amazing action films ever filmed. Action scenes ever filmed. And I totally believe it's so crazy. I cannot explain the crazy choreography, especially in that last fight. It's on Netflix. It's breezy and light, but it's fun, and you will have just too much fun.
I can't imagine it's any better than The Tuxedo.
By the way, I think he still does this in his American stuff, like Shanghai Nights and all that stuff, where at the end during the credits, like they'll show the stunts and all that stuff and the bloopers where he gets hurt and stuff like that. They do that here. He could have died a million times.
Yeah,
in this
one. There's a very thin line between brilliance and stupidity. You know, and I think that he could have died. Maybe in an alternate reality, he did die, but like only the brilliant people would even take that chance.
This is what I heard though about Jackie Chan when he came over here is that all the stuff that he was able to do and was it Hong Kong or both, or was it both Hong Kong and China?
It may have been both, but I think Hong Kong was the main place where he
There wasn't any issue with insurance or anything like that. You could just go and, like, if you wanted to risk your life, that's your prerogative. When he came here and did Rush Hour, I think it started to be where he couldn't do all of his own stunts anymore. And they had to give him a stunt double in some spots. I'm not sure if that's like across the board or if like he did a lot of his stunts, but some of the really like, you know, could kill you type stuff, that's what they had to do or whatever. But there's a noticeable difference, right? When someone comes over to America and they can't do that type of stuff anymore. The way the movies are made are completely different too. But they're not as Rush Hour's fun, obviously.
Oh yeah.
But like a lot of the stuff that they tried to do Jackie Chan in America type movies were not nearly like the fun that you would want to have in something like, you know, he brought up the tuxedo. That's a case in point, right? Yeah. You know, he's not allowed to do everything that he wants to do in those movies.
No, and he's funny. He's funny in Rush Hour because he's the fish out of water, and he's, you know, his comedy is on point. In fact, in Legend of the Drunken Master, the acting through his face, especially when he's drunk, is just absolute like a delight because he can communicate just a ridiculous amount while he's doing these crazy stunts. He'll have these facial expressions that are cartoonish.
Yeah.
And that's what I've never seen in somebody like Bruce Lee or even Ja or like Donnie Yen. Like, they haven't been able to put those two together like Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan, to me, is a singular talent in what he was able to do.
Well, there's a reason why he was compared to like Chaplin and Keaton and all these guys.
Yeah.
So Legend of Drunken Master or Drunken Master 2.
That's right.
That's a huge recommend.
Netflix. Yeah, it's on Netflix. You should watch it.
You have to watch the first one to really know what's going on in part two, though, right? I'm going to recommend a movie that is 100% Barrett and 0% Jeremy.
All right. Sounds up my, my alley.
Yeah, this is something that Jeremy would have absolutely no patience for. But but this movie's really good, and I would suggest to Jeremy to at least try to watch it. But you know, after a while, I know what you guys' tastes are. You know, I haven't seen as much Jean-Luc Godard as I should have as a movie aficionado and everything. I should have seen, like, you know, half of this guy's filmography, but I've only seen, before this weekend, I had only seen two of his. One was Breathless, and the other one was a Gerard Depardieu movie called Oh Woe Is Me, which I saw on Mubi. There's another movie he made called Alphaville. It is about a guy who goes to this town. The movie is saying this is in outer space, essentially, even though it's very, very in France, you know, it's in Paris, yeah. You know, but they're saying it's a completely different planet and everything. This guy comes in to a hotel and he's investigating something, or he needs to find some information about something. And then things are very strange from the outset. Like stuff that just comes out of nowhere that you're just like, whoa, wait a minute. What the hell just happened? He comes into this hotel, and there's this woman who's accompanying him as he goes to his hotel room. And the woman's like, would you like to take a rest today? Would you like to do this? Would you like to do that? And he doesn't answer. He goes into the room, and she follows him in. And he says something about taking a bath, and the girl's like, oh, well, I can take a bath with you and everything. Starts taking her clothes off and everything. And he doesn't say anything at all. Goes into the bathroom. They run the water. And then suddenly there's a guy chasing after him, and he's trying to shoot him down and everything. And they run through the hotel and everything. And it's like, what the hell just happened? As you get further into this movie, you realize that he's here because he's trying to find out about this system that's running the whole planet or whatever, called the Alpha 60. And it's a computer that has become like sentient or in some way, and everybody who is in this town acts in a logical fashion. And everybody who is in this town, there's a lot of talk about how certain words have been erased from the dictionary. So there's things where he's like asking questions, and the guy's like, why? What is why? I don't know what why is. What does that mean? And stuff like that. If you get into this movie's vibe, you'll realize, and I'm debating on whether or not to explain what I think it is, what the people I watched it with think it is, because it is more fun to kind of like learn that on your own. Just know that what you're seeing, I don't think, is being presented as any kind of reality that you know. And that the characters acting within Alphaville are part of a bigger system, and you have to kind of like know that when you go in. And there were even things that I started debating with myself as the guy started going through this world. Certain words probably don't have the same meaning as they are. Sometimes there's, for instance, there's a part where he says something. There's somebody that tells him this: there's going to be 50 executions for men for every woman. And you have to actually, when you see this taking place on the screen, it involves a pool and a bunch of swimmers, and it's an execution going on. And you have to decide, does the word execution mean what I think it means, or does it have a second meaning that means something else in this? Because if words are being erased from the dictionary, if certain words they don't understand are not the same words, you have to understand that, what does it mean in this system? And so a lot of the things in there are things that will not make sense at all. But if you start thinking about it on a sort of a different plane, the movie will have, it may not make total sense even when you get to that conclusion, But I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
It's really good.
From the 60s?
It's from 1965.
Okay.
Alphaville, Jean-Luc Godard movie. Highly recommend it. It is a weird movie, and you have to, I think you have to go till the very end and then sort of decide, what did I just watch? Hmm. It's not so weird that, like, I don't know, there's no reason for it. Sometimes movies are just weird and you're just like, there's no reason for this.
Yep.
I don't even have any idea what they could possibly be saying this is. By the end of this one, you can sort of say, okay, yeah, I may not explain everything, but if you think of it in terms of this kind of world, then yeah, things start making a little bit more sense.
I'm down.
So find you some Alphaville.
Yeah.
Alphaville.
Like you, I need to dive into his catalog. Because I've seen Breathless.
Breathless is really good, too.
Yeah.
I thought Breathless was The Course.
The what?
the Course.
Don't they sing, go on, go on, come on, there's, and leave me breathless.
I think there's also a Richard Gere movie called Breathless.
There's also Madonna's character in Dick Tracy was Breathless Mahoney. No, or was that?
Oh shit! It might be. It's actually a remake. The Richard Gere one is a remake.
Oh wow!
I did not know that.
Probably still not something you need to see.
Yeah, it's like I got a 5-point something on IMDb. Yeah. The Jean-Luc Godard movie has a 7.9. That Breathless is awesome.
Okay. So I watched a movie last night.
Oh no!
I have to warn it.
Avengers Endgame.
I want to wreck a warn it because I want some people to watch it. But I had two glasses of wine before I watched it.
I will say essentially that warns do become recommends a lot of times.
Well, then let's just hard warn this shit. It's a movie from 2015. It's playing right now on Stars called Riot.
Oh, I think I've seen this
I
on
flip
the
flip by 2015. I see Dolph Lundgren's name. I see a description of a guy who robs a bank intentionally to get himself thrown into prison so he can revenge on a bad guy. And I'm like, okay,
all right.
I'll watch. All right, so let me tell you who this stars, other than Dolph Lundgren, who has one of the smallest parts in the movie. The star is Matthew Rhys.
Matthew Rhys has been in other things.
Yes. Do you know any of them?
No.
How do you know the name?
The ones he is known for is like some Beauty and the Beast movie, a movie called The 11th Hour, and another one called One Shot.
Yeah. 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 He's a double discount Chuck Norris.
All right.
Like if Chuck Norris had like a nephew twice removed.
We're going to find out that this is like one of his sons or something. Like Chuck Norris has like 10 kids spread across the world and like he's one of them.
I'm going to tell you. Okay. Because the bad guy. I'm getting ahead of myself. The bad guy is Chuck Liddell doing a Russian accent.
Oh, no.
This is the MMA fighter, right?
Yes. Yes. So for a time, I thought everyone in this movie was some sort of wrestler or boxer. Just because Chuck Liddell was in it and I didn't recognize anyone else. And the entire movie is different scenes of him getting jumped in the prison and beating ass. Over and over and over. Like he gets jumped in the laundry room. Beats ass. He gets jumped in his own cell, beats ass, while his cellmate sleeps through it. Then he gets taken into some solitary room, and some of the guards come in and start beating ass. Why? Because Chuck Liddell, he's the main bad guy. He's a prisoner, but he runs this whole prison.
Yeah.
He wears a suit. The guards protect...
He wears a suit?
Yes, the guards protect him, not the other way around. And he calls the shots. And so... He puts out a hit on this guy. Cooper? Copper? Clark? The main guy. No fucking clue. Chuck Norris. And he's put $100,000. Anybody that brings me his head, prisoner or guard.
All right. All right. Yeah.
And basically the movie ends in a, can you guess? A riot.
Nice.
A riot where Dolph Lundgren turns out to have been a good guy. He's an FBI undercover agent.
Is he a prisoner?
Yes.
Okay.
and a blonde girl from the women's prison, which I guess is next door. Because she gets knocked out by a woman prisoner. She picks a fight, gets intentionally knocked out, wakes up in the infirmary, picks her own handcuffs, climbs up into the ceiling, and then goes over into the men's prison and does some sneaky shit with cameras and whatnot.
The fuck?
Gets back in time. So her and Dolph Lundgren are working together to try and help Cooper Copper Clark get to Chuck Liddell. And there's even a point where it's like Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, where Tom Cruise is telling Simon to open this gate, let me through. And he starts telling the Dolph Lundgren guy, open B-24, open. And then they're about to lose their computer control. And he says, fuck it, open all of them. Open all the doors, open all the halls, open all the cells. And it's just chaos.
It's a riot.
And what's funny is, I want to watch this movie again and only watch the background fights in the riot, because I bet you they are flimsy as shit.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Because all you're supposed to be paying attention to is this fight with the main character right here. The first time he gets jumped, it's in the cafeteria. I think that's appropriate. And as soon as he beats ass, he sits right back down and starts eating again, because he's a hard ass.
That's
he's a
right. tough.
I had the most fun watching this movie.
I have not
had this much fun since John Wick 3. Only John Wick 3 was awesome.
Yeah.
And this was awful. But it was so awful. And there's something about Chuck Liddell doing a Russian accent that you can't even know until you experience it yourself.
How's his Russian?
You should watch the trailer just to I don't even want to approximate it.
Oh, man.
I don't even want to try.
His name is Copper. Copper Jack Stone.
Copper Jack Stone.
And I kept thinking during this whole thing of the Kaiser Chiefs song called I Predict a Riot.
Oh, yeah.
like, I think the song predates this movie, but I'm sitting there thinking, like, they're watching the movie Riot, and they're, like, not seeing a riot, but they're like, I predict a riot! I predict a riot! By the way, it also looks like Nikita Bogolyubov, who plays Meyerbeck in Barry, is in this as well.
Oh, cool.
So I was just looking through all the names. There's a lot of pretty women in this riot movie, prison riot movie.
Yes, that's why I say that I think the prisons are next door to each other.
Yeah.
Because for a while there, I wasn't sure why we were even seeing anything in a women's prison, till at the very end it comes together.
I don't think that's a thing. I don't think they usually have...
I mean,
the next door.
I don't think so. I maybe once upon a time, but I don't think anymore.
Yeah.
I think they keep them pretty separate.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe Chuck Liddell, because he's running things, was like, hey, put the fly honeys right next to him.
I had only ever seen Chuck Liddell act on Entourage when he played Chuck Liddell.
Oh, yeah. And he didn't do that very well.
He didn't do that very well. So imagine.
Yeah. So that movie's Riot. I don't know if it's a warn or a recommend, but you should go watch it.
I think I probably will.
If you have stars, it's on there.
I tell you what, you want to have fun, you watch Legend of the Drunken Master, and I'll watch Riot.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
May end up watching both of those. Back to back.
Cool. You want to do some questions?
Let's do some questions.
Let's do it.
Shit.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
Shit.
Well, I don't know what happened, but he went. That was a. Are you okay?
Yeah, Okay. This is a fun one. What are some of the best or worst character introductions in movies?
Okay, so I'm going to go with Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now, the Marlon Brando.
Man, he can't get any better than that.
Yeah, I think you just hear his voice at first, and then we finally see him come out of the shadows.
He goes, yeah. Bacala, bacala, bacala.
You speak Burmese?
Yeah. But that's a good one. The Joker in The Dark Knight is a great character introduction. Yeah. Yoda in Empire Strikes Back is a great character introduction.
Before he reveals himself or when he reveals himself?
I mean, we are introduced to Yoda before we know who Yoda is. And when he is fucking with Luke, when he goes to the Dagobah system and everything.
Honestly, that was the original title of that movie, Fucking with Luke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Looking?
Yeah.
That's the one you have, I would say.
Fucking with you, I say.
Sean Connery in Untouchables is a great character.
I almost wrote that one down.
Yeah, because he's just doing a regular like beat, and Kevin Costner runs into him while he's doing his beat and everything, and there's that line that you love in there, yeah, that where he's like, He's like, how come you don't know that I'm blah, blah, blah? And because he told him that he was a whatever officer.
You're a treasury officer. You said so yourself.
Yeah, and he goes, and then, yeah.
He says, who would claim to be that? Who was not?
And so then Connery sort of becomes the heart of that whole movie, too, mm-hmm. which is so crazy. Because Connery's like, you're not doing this the right way. You got to go in and kick some ass, man. You can't just do this like process shit over and over.
Then he turns to the camera and goes, how many people want to kick some ass? I do.
Is this Sean Connery's best performance?
Ooh. Well, there is Medicine Man.
There is Medicine
Man. Yeah. I mean, the Bond stuff is the Bond stuff, but yeah. It's not.
This is up there.
I would say yes. And I haven't seen everything. And remember, Sean Connery's in like 150 movies. But
yeah,
he's
good in Hunt for Red October, but he's not acting like he is in Untouchables.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's really like with it and on board. And that he's in 94 different things, by the way. And The Rock, he's just kind of playing off of himself. The mm-hmm. Untouchables, he looks like he's really like engaged.
Yeah,
and
it seems like he's really... acting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Acting.
One other one that I put in here, and I haven't seen Devil in a Blue Dress in a long time, but I believe Don Cheadle's character comes in when Denzel Washington's getting his ass beat. Hmm. We don't even know the mouse character that Don Cheadle plays at this point. And so like he's getting in a fight and you're like, oh shit, Denzel's dead, right? How's he gonna get out of this? And then like you see a gun just show up behind the guy who's wrestling him and everything, and Don Cheadle's like, you want me to shoot him easy? You want me to shoot him? And I think it's the first time we ever see him in the movie. That's a great introduction. Yeah. I did have one worst. I couldn't think of very many horrible ones. Mm-hmm. But I'm not even sure if this is the first time we're introduced to him, but J. Edgar Hoover in Nixon, the Bob Hoskins, Bob Hoskins is playing J. Edgar Hoover in that. And we are introduced to him, you know, is this, I mean, Oliver Stone seemed to have a real problem with his gay characters, like either in Alexander, he like ignored most of it, mm-hmm. or in JFK, it was like some sort of sideshow type mm-hmm. of thing. And in this one, it's kind of like, oh, look at him. He's such a pervert. And, you know, he like puts this little thing in his mouth and his butler guy goes over and like, you know, like goes over and takes it out of his mouth. They kiss and everything. And it's done in this real salacious way. And there's even a guy next to J. Edgar Hoover who's like, oh my God, you know, all this time, you know, it's a terrible character introduction. Mm. J. Edgar Hoover, I want to see like an actual, like maybe not even handed introduction. I mean, I guess the movie J. Edgar, but that movie's not very good.
That movie was not very good.
No. But a more even handed thing than that. Mm. This is the guy who's like putting files out on everybody and everything. He's much more than just like introducing him as this like perverted, you know, like there's just the way he films it is like, look at what a fucking pervert this guy is. And it's like, fuck you.
This guy does not do subtlety very well.
No.
I didn't see the part of the question about worst.
It's a hard one to come up.
Huh?
I've got the worst.
You got it. I only wrote down ones that I thought were awesome, but I was trying to stay off the beaten path. So my first one, my best one, is Mary McDonnell in Sneakers.
Yeah.
Because they need some extra help. He's not smart enough to understand the math conference he's going to have to go to. And they're like, hey, who do you want to go with us, me or this guy? And he's like, I was thinking I'd take Liz. And everyone in the group stops and turns like, and so you as an audience member know already this is someone important from the past. Mm-hmm. And then he walks into the piano studio and sees her sitting there, but she's not moving and her shoulders aren't moving. And it's playing the sweeping boom as he walks around the piano and sees it's this tiny little girl playing it. And she's the piano teacher. My father was a piano mover. I just thought that was a great introduction that kind of throws you off kilter a little bit.
Yeah.
And then let's see, Syndrome in The Incredibles. Did you want to say something about
this? Is the part where he asked her to go to this conference that Donald Logue is doing his conference or whatever, and she's like, we are not getting back together. And he goes, hey, don't flatter yourself and all that. And then she's like, And then she says, pick me up at 9, I think. And then, she walks off and he's like, yes.
He loves her. I like Syndrome in The Incredibles because it's almost a full halfway through the movie before he shows up. Now, he showed up his buddy earlier.
Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah,
basically, when Mr. Incredible goes back out the second time to the island, he's in the conference room waiting for a meeting. Mm-hmm. And then the conference room's pulled apart and there's the monster. But immediately, Syndrome's like, he's bigger. He's better. And I like just the reveal of not only there being a puppet master and it being a bad place, not a happy island. And then, of course, it turns out to be Buddy. I think that's a great character introduction. Mm. And the only other one that I will say is worth naming is, even though I have some radical Star Trek opinions that I'm about to introduce to the world.
Nice.
But
anything that upsets Star Trek fans is good with me.
I'm saying in the future. But I will say, okay, so Wrath of Khan is great.
Yep.
I'm starting to believe that J.J. Abrams' Star Trek in 2009
mm-hmm.
is the best Star Trek.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, you're talking about the original reboot, not Into Darkness.
Not Into Darkness.
How controversial would that be?
A lot of Trek fans think it's too flashy.
Yeah, but it's also extremely excellent. Now that you can look back on it 10 years after it came out, I think it's got its own sort of, like, you know, people have really started to appreciate
and it's
that
one. The heart of Trek, man. That whole Chris Hemsworth scene that starts it all out, and then Chris Pine basically starting out selfish, cocky, self-serving, and ending out, you know, basically willing to sacrifice where he needs to. Great movie. But anyway, Khan's introduction in Wrath of Khan is an all-timer.
Yes, it is.
With the Beatles in the helmets and the explaining that they're on the wrong planet and who he is. So that was the three I wrote down.
Nice. I have a best/worst.
Okay.
Calvin Candy and Django Unchained.
Okay.
Oh.
I watched this movie once and I cannot bring myself to watch it again. And even though I love the whole sequence at Candyland, whatever it is, mm-hmm. it's got all the tension of Inglourious Basterds. It's got all-star performances from Jamie Foxx and Christoph Waltz and Leo. But the intro, when they walk in, is almost an iconic shot at this point, where it zooms in, quick zoom mm-hmm. right on Leo, and he's got the cigarette and everything, and he's like, you know, he tips his hand. It's a GIF, basically, right?
Yeah.
Before GIFs were GIFs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in the context of this fight between his two slaves, or two of his slaves.
Yeah.
That I can't stomach. I know that's the point of the movie,
mm-hmm.
but I just can't stomach it. So the scenes that I have watched since then have been when they sit down to dinner and all that stuff, and all that is great. And it's a great introduction. It's a great introduction in context to show you how evil yet charming he is.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But yeah, so that's kind of the thing.
It's hard for me to believe that Tarantino, I think what he cared most in making this movie was the revenge aspect.
Yes.
First and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And sensitivity to race issues was a distant consideration.
Yeah, he wanted to set it up to where you felt absolutely no problem whatsoever with Django doing whatever he wanted to.
Right.
Rightfully so. But I don't think he had to go to those lengths that he needed to go in the movie. Now, I understand reality is a different thing.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I think, knowing Tarantino, he researched that so well that he had to include some of those things in there. I'm of a completely different mind on that. I mean, not that I can just watch that movie with impunity, and I haven't. And I think it's not his best, and it's like one of his. I'd put it at the bottom, actually.
I would too.
And it's it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
But like that type of thing, when they put it in movies, a lot of times it doesn't bother me in the sense of. It's hard to explain, right? Like it bothers me, yes, that really happened, but in that he put it in the movie doesn't bother me.
Right.
You know, I think that when you put in stuff that really happened, if he had invented that, then we start having sort of a kind of a talk about, like, okay, you know, did this need to be in here?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, yeah, I mean, sometimes, yeah, you don't need to have that much stuff to get the point that this guy needs to die and everything.
Yeah, it's, I, yeah, basically, you're saying the same thing, basically.
Yeah.
Like, we get the point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fully on. I want to see him beat ass much more than I want to see why he's beating ass. The worst introduction of all time. Oh, I'm going to be hyperbolic about it. Suicide Squad.
Oh, Jesus.
Every character in Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Well, anything where they require the name of the character to be splashed
and the stats.
On. And the stats. Yeah.
Country and of origin.
And a new musical cue for each. That movie, that's the thing I remember most, is it has like six major songs in like the first 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Like every time we switch over it, you don't own me.
Yeah.
We switch to somebody else.
Right.
I mean, we watched it when it came out in theaters, and then I watched it to Senate, and I haven't gone back to it, even any of it. Like, I've gone back to Justice League just because it was on.
Yeah.
I haven't gone back to Superman.
But it's weird because that movie left such a bad taste in my mouth that I think it probably impacted my initial viewing of, like, because that came out before Batman v Superman, didn't it?
No, it came out after Batman v Superman, before Justice League.
Okay. Mm. I thought, okay. Well, anyway, I'm excited about the James Gunn one.
Sure.
I think we'll be able to go in with a clean slate. The first one is not going to give any baggage for me.
The first one is bad on a level where, and it was like hard to send it even.
Yep.
That's how not hard as in coming up with material, but how much you had to pause it to stop and go, this is wrong. This is ridiculous too. I every time Suicide Squad is brought up, I think of things that we wrote about it and just stuff in there that they threw in that it's like, this felt like an idea they threw in and didn't develop it, but they kept it in the movie and they didn't realize why it was there in the first place. And then, you know, they shot it and it's like, okay, that's part of the movie now. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, but
this doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah. And I also was excited about that movie before it came out because there was discussion because of how Logan was able to get through with that R rating and it was a huge hit and everything. I thought Suicide Squad was going to be an R rated. Mm-hmm. Not that R rating would have made it any better, but I was excited about that aspect of it too, that it was going to be like this balls to the wall type of thing. And yeah, it really wasn't.
It was awful and terrible character introductions. One of my favorite introductions of all time is Nicole Kidman in Eyes Wide Shut.
Dun, 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 dun.
It's genius. I went back and watched it. I've seen this movie. I may have seen this movie more times than any other Kubrick movie besides The Shining.
Mm. Wow.
And that first shot is iconic for so many reasons because you can't get more simple of an intro. It's block lettering on black background. Filmed by Stanley Kubrick, you know, Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman. And then it's this shot of Nicole Kidman standing in her closet / dressing room and just taking off her, I guess, work dress.
Mm-hmm.
And just starting to get ready for this big ball. And it's such a stark introduction because it probably lasts 3, 4, 5 seconds or something like that before it goes into the title card of Eyes Wide Shut. But it tells you so much about that character that she's initially going to be treated almost like an object because she's naked, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But also that she's basically starting the movie laying bare. I mean, she's in the birthday suit, essentially. So there's a lot of like visual imagery. There's a lot of character development in just those 3 to 5 seconds of her standing there and disrobing. And it's just magic. And the music that you were humming is a waltz that I always forget what the name of it is, but it's a classical piece of work, and god damn, it's so brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Contrasting to the end of that movie that maybe we'll get to.
No, we won't.
My question for the pod is, what scene ending line of dialogue was just distracting and out of place with the rest of the movie? This person actually... The email subject was, what has two thumbs and loves blowjobs?
you know what's funny? The other day, I was trying to think of where that came from because I remember that line.
Oh, yeah.
and that was the first time I'd ever heard it. And I don't know if it was because of the movie or if it was because it was already a thing before the movie. I started hearing people do a lot more often. But I was like, what movie is that? And this question comes up. And I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, I haven't seen Insomnia in forever.
Yeah, it's from Christopher Nolan's Insomnia, which I've completely forgotten about. But it's these lines of dialogue that are so out of place that it almost takes you out of the movie and or you think about for the rest of the movie because it's so out of bounds,
mm-hmm.
to paraphrase Guy Fee.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. A couple that I came up with, and I don't know if these completely go under the criteria, but I think they're close. One is because a line that is said is towards the end of the movie, and so like to get taken out of the end of this movie the last 5-10 minutes is silly, but there's a line that I just mull over every once in a while. Life Aquatic, Jeff Goldblum has a line where towards the end he's talking to Bill Murray and they're talking about how they're horrible husbands or whatever, and he says, "We've never made great husbands. Of course I have an excuse. I am part gay." And Bill Murray's like says something to the effect of I think all of us are in some way or something like that. And then it just cuts to the next thing. Huh. And it's just a weird way of saying that, right? Part gay. Like
it's a very Wes Anderson way to
very Wes Anderson way of saying it. And Jeff Goldblum. I watched a thing that he did with Colbert. It's that movie plot roulette thing that he does with some actors, and the actor sits on the couch and they give him like these cards and they give him a bare bones plot of a movie that they're in, or like a tricky way of saying the plot that they're in, and they have to guess which movie it is.
Okay.
So like he goes through all this, and the first one is like things go wrong after African tree frog DNA, blah, blah, blah. And it's so Jurassic Park. And Jeff Goldblum's like, oh my God, I may be stumped right off the beginning. And then finally goes, oh, that's Jurassic Park, isn't it? And then he gets a lot of like harder ones later. Mm. You're like, the fuck, Jurassic Park? Jeff Goldblum is such a weird dude,
yes,
man. I want to meet that guy.
I know.
And just him saying that I'm part gay, it just comes out of nowhere. There's another one that I have on here. And know that this is out of place only because of when you look at the rest of the movie, but it's the one scene that you're going to remember. Mm-hmm. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has the scene where Steve Martin goes up to the rent-a-car lady, and he's already had a horrible, like, past 24, 48 hours, and he's gone out to see that his car isn't there. There's no car. He goes up there. She's on the phone, like not paying attention to him and everything. And, you know, he does that whole, she does that whole, may I help you, sir? And he's like, yes. He just goes into that whole thing where he's like, I want a fucking car. Right. Fucking now. And he says fuck probably like 15 times scene. It's the only scene in the entire movie where there's any swearing.
The rest of the movie is very chaste, essentially.
It's very,
right?
Like PG-13 type of movie. And then there's this one profane section. And you really, the movie actually has a hard time recovering from that scene because it's so funny. It's so out there. It does get to its heart. The heart of it after this, because Steve Martin does go through that whole thing where he reunites with Candy and he realizes that John Candy's wife is probably dead, and he's been talking about her in a way that he didn't realize was in the past tense, or that he was trying, you know, that he was trying to cover for the fact that she was dead and he didn't have anybody to go home to. So it does get to the heart of it afterwards, but that scene right there in the smack in the middle of the movie is gonna just get you into that. You just keep thinking about that the whole time. It's such a centerpiece to that thing. I love Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but that scene right there is it has a hard time staying with that from that moment.
I bet people were rolling in the theater.
Oh my God. I would have loved to have been old enough to watch that movie that came out when I was 10.
I'm going to go with something from The Martian, because, Jeff Daniels' character in this movie is a dickhead.
He's such a dickhead.
Yeah.
And he's unnecessarily dickheaded. Like when, Vincent Kapoor does his press conference and says we're working to bring him home alive, and he walks back in and says, "Don't say alive, Vincent." And like, there's so much nicer ways and not in public to dress that guy down. But in one of the earlier all hands on deck meetings about how they're going to rescue him, they figure out the timeline, and Jeff Daniels summarizes it
by saying Bruce has 3 months to get the payload done. And it cuts to Bruce, who's at the JPL on a monitor, and he goes, "We'll do our best." And for no goddamn reason at all, Jeff Daniels goes, "Mark dies if you don't." Yeah. And I'm like, fucking duh. Everyone here knows this. Like, there's no reason. Yeah. That's only there to remind the audience how urgent everything is in case they've forgotten. But the head of NASA is not going to say to the head of the JPL, "Well, Mark dies if you don't."
Well, yeah. The whole conversation has been whittling down. You know, it'll take me 9 months. Well, you need you. I can do maybe 6 months.
Yeah.
You have three.
3 months.
And he's already stern enough. He's like, 3 months is the deadline. That's it. And so that stinger is even fucking worse. You're like, God damn it, dude.
It has always bothered me. I've seen that movie maybe 20 times now. But every single time, Mark dies if you don't. It's so spiteful. It's so unnecessarily mean.
Yeah, stop thinking about your deadlines and just do it.
There's a human life hanging in the balance, if you didn't know that.
Yeah.
Mark dies if you don't.
Mine is from an Eminem song.
Ooh, Lose Yourself?
Love the Way You Lie.
Oh, it's Rihanna.
Yeah.
All right.
Good song.
Right. Okay.
Really good video.
Eminem with Rihanna is not as good as Eminem by himself. Okay.
I got you.
All right.
But it's got Dominic. Who's Charlie from Lost? Dominic.
Monaghan.
And Jennifer's body, Megan Fox.
Okay.
They're in this video, and they're this contentious relationship. It's great, man. The house is on fire and everything. They're arguing. They're boning. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
Are they friends with a monster under their bed?
They're friends with a monster under your bed. But during the lyrics, it's about this contentious relationship and everything. And then he gets to the end of the second verse where he's like, "Now you get to watch her leave out of the window." I guess that's why they call it window pane.
Oh.
That's a bad line. That's a bad line.
That is such an un-Eminemic line that I cannot stomach that song. Guess that's why they call it window pane.
Come on, your hip,
fuck.
Wiggle your lips. I mean, he's had bad lyrics his whole career.
Yep.
It's just some are worse than others. The window
pane
one is bad.
Maybe number one.
I tell you, the whole of the song Stan is like fingernails on a chalkboard to me.
What?
I can't stand it.
Do you not like the Dido portions of it either?
I like the Dido song on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like. Okay, you know I'm an Eminem fan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know I got his back more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
It just remember how we were talking about Taylor Swift
and
how there's just a little bit of a you kind of do think you're awesome though.
Yeah.
I feel like that's Stan the entire song. It's like, I'm going to make myself look good. I have fans that are obsessed, and they're so obsessed that they do crazy things and die, but I still return their mail.
Point taken. What is an example of a plot point in a movie which does not appear in any other movie ever made? Now, this is an ambitious question.
Okay.
But I think we have some solid answers here.
Yeah, and it's ambitious mainly because you can come up with something and then there'll be some asshole out there who's like, no, I saw that movie in the movie like, Madeline or something like that. I believe, and obviously this movie was based on a comic book, so it probably came from the comic book first, but Scott Pilgrim having to defeat 7 evil exes to date Ramona in Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Movie is just wholly unique.
Yes, it is.
Even since. I've never seen anything since that comes close to it.
No, it's hard. It's a movie that's hard to replicate because, first off, Edgar Wright. Nobody else is Edgar Wright. And then, when you make... Sometimes things are so unique, like they're hard to like. Yeah, you know, I was reading a Cracked article a few years ago talking about like it's weird that certain bands didn't get copied very much, like Red Hot Chili Peppers and stuff like that. And I think it's because the sound is so them that if you try to make it, you can't, and then second off, you're probably going to suck at it and you're not going to be successful at it. So anybody tried to do a Scott Pilgrim type movie, it's the same thing. You gotta have the right elements to do it.
You gotta have that cast. You have to have that director. You have to have that editing and like the little text scrawls on there, like every once in a while, the quick cuts to the sex bomb, the music. Beck wrote the songs for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Damn, you have awesome. Just the right actors like Michael Cera, Jason Schwartzman, Mary Elizabeth Winstead. These people, I mean, Anna Kendrick in a small role. You have like
Kieran Culkin is in that, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. But yeah. But just the idea, like how they're like battling you with music, and they're and there's like just the idea of seven evil exes. Somehow, some way, Jason Schwartzman, they throw it off as a joke at the end because he's like, you know how long it took me to get that seven evil exes together? Like an hour or something like that. And somehow, some way, he was able to magically make them, you know, a part of this video game.
Yeah.
Even though they don't really explain that, and you don't have to. If they explained it, it would be shitty. Yep. But like, just the idea that they are magically drawn to fight him, and they have to fight him so that he can date this girl—that's never been done.
No. You also have Superman hooking up with Captain Marvel.
Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. That's the old
Superman and Superman.
Yeah, yeah, Bumping yeah. That's uglies. the not many people remember Brie Larson's in that.
Yeah. Oh God. She's amazing in this
movie. Yeah, oh, she's great. Yeah, her talent. There's a million people in this that you don't remember. There's that whole thing with I think it's Thomas Jane and Clifton Collins, who are those like cops who come in and mm-hmm. and they talk to Superman.
Brandon, oh, yeah.
Brandon Routh.
Yeah, yeah.
The vegan police. And then like says, here on Thursday you had gelato, and he's like, gelato's vegan. He's like, that's milk and eggs, hombre.
And then he goes, you had a chicken parmesan, and he's like, chicken parmesan is vegan, right? Yeah,
yeah. And you have that awesome Chris Evans cameo that's in there too. Mm-hmm. Captain America's in this movie.
Oh yeah, that's right.
But the Chris Evans thing is awesome too. Yeah. That movie, God, what a great movie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
It's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Yeah. I almost went with Neo dodging the bullets on the roof in The Matrix, and I think I could make an argument for almost the whole of The Matrix being a wholly unique plot point, except that there have been other movies and stories about the world we live in is a fiction pulled over our eyes. But at the end of Matrix Reloaded, now there's a renaissance these days for Reloaded and Revolutions. There's a lot of people
of course, saying
these movies are better than you remember. Some people even thinking it's better than the first. I don't agree with any of them. No. I still enjoy 2 and 3. I do. There's lots of good stuff there. That fucking staircase fight in Reloaded and that and Superman fight at the end in Revolutions. A++.
But 2 is better than 3.
On some days.
Really?
I
derailed you. I'm sorry.
No, but that final third of Revolutions is still better than any Superman fight ever filmed by Warner Brothers. Smith throw each other around, and then that fucking slow bubble water punch thing. Anyway, at the end of the second one, he's broken out. He's not in the program anymore, mm-hmm. and he's not hooked up to the machines in the ship. He's walking around the caverns of the bombed out Earth, and the Sentinels come in, and he just puts his hand up like he knows, because he can feel them. And he fucking knocks some things out with his brain power.
Yeah.
In the real world.
Yeah.
And I left that theater, my mind was boggled.
Yeah.
Now, none of my theories came true for 3. I had theories. I had wild, wild theories. But what's so amazing is that they had built this universe and shown you 2 full movie stories now in this universe and still had an idea that could blow your brain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
Didn't 3 come out like just a few months after?
6 months later.
Yeah, it was the summer was Reloaded and then November was Revolutions.
Wow. I mean, some of that is a good thing, I guess, at the time, but
this is one of the...
They could use a little bit more planning.
Those movies are some of the first I remember being like... They used to just schedule big movies for midnight shows. Now it's common. In fact, Thursday at 7, a lot of times you can watch movies now, and they include it in the weekend. That's very sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
I remember those two, and I remember, I think it was Revolutions. We had at Hollywood 27, we had a midnight show of it on Friday, and one group of people took that very literally, and they thought that it meant when Thursday was over, midnight Friday.
Oh, Jesus.
And which nobody in the fucking world.
It took me a second to even figure that out.
Does. And every time I've had a complaint like this, these are the only people in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that they don't have backup. They don't have anybody that's arguing in their favor here. It's just you that came up with this. Had one long time ago with 101 Dalmatians at my old theater, the remake, the Glenn Close 101 Dalmatians. Mm-hmm. The opening weekend was huge for Disney. And they said, we had shows that were at exactly 6 o'clock, and some people forgot that that's a night show, not a matinee. The matinee was at like 4 to 6 or whatever, or 1 to 6. And so they changed it the next week. Disney themselves changed it. They said, all right, we're just going to have them at 7 o'clock now. There's no 6 o'clock and all that. And the next week we had people coming in at 6. They were the only people. Only people who came in at 6 because they looked at a Sunday paper or something like that. And they were like, we're here for the 101 Dalmatians. Sorry, it's at 7 now. And they were like, but it says in the newspaper. It doesn't, but, you know, I'm sorry that you came out here. You know, I know that you probably looked at the Sunday paper. Don't acknowledge. They never acknowledge that. And it's like, it just says it in the paper. Yeah. Just says it. And you're like, I don't know what to tell you. Do you see, there's no other people around. There's nobody else backing you up. And actually, there was one other person came up and drove up. It's like, oh, do you have 101 Dalmatians at 6? And I was like, no, sorry, man. They changed the time. Oh, okay. And drove off. Meanwhile, this family, of course, you don't want to disappoint people, but there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Just hang out.
And it's I just hate that. Like, people get pissed off at you about that stuff. Same thing with that midnight show. It's just like, they're like, this is false advertisement. Like, we really wanted to false advertise that we had a show we weren't playing.
That's right.
How do we benefit from that?
By the way, we are going to get another live action 101 Dalmatians. Just
with actual puppies? With actual Dalmatians?
With Emma Stone, that's all I know.
Oh.
Called Cruella.
Oh, is she playing Cruella?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
All right.
You know, like Glenn Close, she didn't do a good enough job. We gotta redo this. There you go.
She's gonna have some straight cash, homie.
Sure.
Mine is one that we just saw recently, and I love it. It's the fight underwater in John Wick 3.
Nice.
Where the bullets droop.
Yes.
It's so awesome.
Yes.
Because we had just talked about this fairly recently.
Freaking movie shows bullets whizzing.
Every movie would have shown them having this gunfight in the hot tub and like going, you know, breaking out the shit. No, not John Wick 3. They fire point blank and it goes, pew.
Oh my God.
It's like watching erect penises fall one at a time.
Yes. It is exactly like that. Oh my God, dude. If John Wick 3 is my favorite movie by the end of the year, then something really like just it blew my balls off.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
To quote my favorite movie reviewer.
But like, and then he figures out within like a couple of seconds, he's like, okay, well, I'm going to swim up to you and put him right into your neck. And I love it so much. Oh my God. Of a movie with a million surprises, that one stuck out to me because it's just such a funny visual.
Yeah, I have also never seen a horse used in hand-to-hand combat quite.
Oh,
well.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah,
this movie has a dozen that you could answer this question.
That's
with.
Right. And the other, you know, I'll throw in the Burj Khalifa scene from Fallout.
Mm. Yeah,
Because it's a Fallout Ghost Protocol.
Yep.
Because yes, you've had, you know, aerial acrobatics and stuff like that in other movies. You've had stuff in tall buildings. Never, even in like Entrapment, you had a thing at the time, the tallest structures in the world. But you never had anything like this, especially with a guy that was doing a lot of his own work. And I don't know how much of Tom Cruise was outside of the building. I know there was a picture of him at the very tippy top, like up at the
He was
the
outside
spire.
He had a harness, but he was outside on the glass doing the
He was
stuff.
Outside on the glass. Obviously he had a harness, but like, yeah, he made it all the way up to the top, and I was like, God damn. So I don't think you'll ever, because of insurance stuff that you were talking about, because of practicality and because of just Tom Cruise being a singular dude, similar to Jackie Chan,
I don't know if you'll ever see that again. Although, I certainly haven't seen it before.
I think Cruise actually does have an insurance policy, but it's like some outrageous amount. Like, it's one of those, like, I'm sure the insurance company is glad to take free money for it.
Yeah.
But I think it's outright, like, one of those, I wouldn't doubt it if it's $150 million.
No, actually,
like that.
If Tom Cruise dies filming a movie doing a stunt, his heirs own Canada.
Yes. Yes.
That's how
Canada's
big the policy
like,
is.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
You knew the deal going into it. We informed you all
yeah.
via email.
Yeah.
We send out a blast. It's yeah. your own fault.
And, you know, I mean, it was clearly an accident. Nobody was behind this.
It's a bunch of Canadians like, yeah. Hey, buddy.
Yeah. There were a couple others that I wrote down here. In Speed, the bus can't go under 50 miles an hour is another type of thing that I've never seen before. And then, yeah, Adam Sandler trying to get million frequent flyer miles by buying a bunch of puddings. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, that's good.
He's never happy. Well, he's happy at the end of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's never happier than when he's buying all that shit.
Oh, yeah.
And he's doing the little dance in the grocery aisle and everything.
Yeah. I love when he's like describing it too. He's like sitting there going, he's describing the whole contest. He's like, I think they came up with the contest because they're trying to push the roast beef dinners, because those are like $5.99, but you can get the puddings for like four four for one or something. Like that.
Yeah.
And they have all have the individual UPC codes on them.
That's great.
Good shit.
That's great.
Okay, well, that'll do it for this week. Keep going to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins on Facebook, SoundCloud. We have a CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, and we have a Discord that I have been able to deliver a few links to people through Facebook. You have to get a private link. And I think you can also go to some other places, and if that's the case, Jeremy or Barrett can tell me if somebody
There's
else is.
Also a pets channel on our Discord now where people just share pictures of their pets.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to get on that shit. Yeah.
That's correct. We have one for Behind the Sins that just recently came up. The podcast Behind the Sins has a channel.
Yeah.
There's one for movies. There's one for the Sincast. There's one for the videos. There's all sorts of stuff on there. But anyway, that'll do it for this week. It's Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Barrett Scherer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
When I'm singing along with the Taylor song, I'm usually doing something annoying on purpose.
Like that. Like, you need to calm down.
Because she sings it so damn.
I wrote a sin about this. Where it's like can he just stop? Can he just not? I was like, take the most annoying traits of a person and make it into a song.
Whole album so far. I like the songs. Like, I don't have any problem with them, but... But all of them have that sort of quality to it, right?
Yep.
Like I'm kind of above it all, or I'm making fun of myself, but but she's making fun of herself in that Taylor way.
Mm-hmm.
There's something a bit off about it. Yeah. What is it? What is it about it? Like the me song is like sort of like this ha ha ha, like, you know,
it's a shake it off type single, right?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Shake It Off is a better song.
Yes, much better. But it's like super breezy, super, I don't care about what other people are thinking. Like, I've got a nice relationship and everything, and I have self-positivity and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's much more Shake It Off than it is something like, you know,
right.
Delicate or something like that.
Right. But there's something about that song that's like, you know, like, ha, 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 I think so highly of myself, or blah, blah, blah. But then at the same time, you're like, I feel like you feel this way about yourself.
Yeah, of course. She's Taylor fucking Swift, though.
And,
like, she probably should.
And there was that thing that was trending on Twitter just a few days. Well, it was like last week or something, where she's like rocking out to her own song and everything, and she's drunk.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Oh, was she drunk?
Yeah.
I just saw the headlines.
Yeah, I saw the video, and I can't remember which song it is.
Oh, she's at a club, right?
No,
she is.
Is she in a club? I thought she was like on a rooftop or something.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Maybe she's in a club. Anyway, yeah, she's just sitting there like rocking out to her own song, drunk.
It actually looked to me like she was like, like almost choreographed dancing. Did you watch the video?
No.
Because she's like...
I saw like a still from it and it looked
she's
like...
She's lip-syncing, you know, and it gets to that part where it's like, it's 7 a.m. and she like throws all of her hair over in front of her face like it's, she's got morning hair or whatever, but it's extra dramatic because she's had a few drinks. And then she stands up. There are a couple more times where she does a dance motion that corresponds to the lyrics. I think it's harmless enough.
Sure.
No, I mean, yeah, it's harmless.
But yeah, you know, I mean, maybe... Tell all your famous friends not to film you when you're drunk dancing. Shit. She's also allowed to have a few drinks and enjoy her own music.
Fuck yeah, man.
I was in a shitty band for 10 years. Sorry, guys. I'm talking to the band members there.
They knew.
We recorded three different times. We scrounged enough cash three different times to actually book time in a recording studio. And every single time we finished, I listened to the shit out of that.
Yeah, me too.
I would blast that shit, Mike. I felt like a goddamn rock star. She actually is.
I know.
The thing about the VMAs is they've been playing like these artist spotlights. Mm-hmm. So like an hour of Missy Elliott and an hour of Taylor Swift. And I've been seeing a lot of videos I've never seen before from both artists. Like
really?
Playing. Yeah. I mean, back in the Missy Elliott days, like I wasn't watching very many music videos. So all that stuff's new to me.
Oh, that's a treat then.
Man, you need to be on drugs when you watch some of her shit.
Yeah, it's very true. But the when the Taylor stuff comes on, I'm like, God damn, she's so fucking adorable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's one where they show her from like when she's like a baby and then she's like, you know, like it's like all these home videos and everything. And I'm like, yep, there's the making of Taylor right there.
Are they playing the back catalog? Like the I Knew You Were Trouble and stuff like that?
Yeah, they're playing everything.
That one had Romeo and Juliet, right?
I don't think so. I think that was the next one. That's
the
one
next one
where...
had Mean on it, and that one is awesome. I think.
I can't even remember how Mean goes.
Why you gotta be so mean?
Oh, yeah.
No,
that's why you gotta be so rude.
Actually, it does.
That's magic. Why you gotta be so rude? Yesterday morning, up out of the bed. I like to make him a Rasta singer.
Well, they're trying to be Rasta. It's fucking annoying.
Well, they're singing reggae, but they're not trying to sound Rasta.
Well, isn't reggae and Rasta kind of...
No, man. The entire discography of... The Police is basically reggae music, but that's not Rasta.
Rasta's like the actual like indigenous.
I guess I'm speaking from a music theory perspective, and I view reggae as a beat.
Right, yeah. Like the new Jonas Brothers song.
Oh, yeah, I can't keep up anymore. I haven't followed the Jonas Brothers since that camp movie. Camp sing along.
Camp rock.
God, one day, this is so interesting. I bought on eBay basically a digital 8-track. And it was at the time the most popular one for like garage musicians and whatnot. But basically, I could lay down tracks with my own instruments and my own keyboard and digitally mix them and create my own songs, basically. I bought it on eBay cheap. And they did that whole thing. Here's the slip. We'll be back again. And here's the slip. We'll be back again. Third time. I'm racing home from work to get this is when we worked at Hollywood. I'm racing home from work to get there, and I fucking pass the UPS guy coming out of our cul-de-sac, and I turned around and I honked and I flashed my lights. Yeah, dude, I was like, I gotta have this. You're gonna take it off to some facility. I need it now.
Taylor Swift is the original, is the first album, and then Fearless had 15 Love Story. Love Story is that Romeo and Juliet thing, right?
Okay,
and Breathe. So those were the, and You Belong With Me. So that's Fearless. And then Speak Now comes in, and Speak Now doesn't have nothing on it besides Mean. It's got Mine, Sparks Fly, Back to December.
How does Mean go?
Why you got me? But then Red is what has all the shit on it.
You're being too mean.
I Knew You Were Trouble, 22, We're Never Ever Getting Back Together, and Begin Again. Begin Again?
And she's had lots of albums.
Begin Again is the one where they show her from being a kid.
I love that restaurant. Begin Again's?
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome.
Rude.
That's Ooh. That's a wild ass movie.
Barracuda, is that the movie or the song?
It's just the song.
Just the song. Yeah.
Video for
the movie's like now a streaming service for random songs. Yeah, like, that'd be awesome. Like, here's Barracuda playing it for a month.
That's hard, right?
Yeah.
That's hard. It's got to
be. I think
hard.
It is. Yeah, I think it is.
Hart, the Nancy.
Yeah, yeah. Nancy Wilson.
Reagan. But was Rita Wilson in it?
Ooh, Rita Wilson. No, but I think she was in Sleepless in Seattle.
Did you know that she has an album? She sings music now.
Really?
Just
Rita Wilson?
Just like Jeremy Renner.
Huh. Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw a Jeremy Renner thing the other day. I was like,
God.
Really?
It's the trippiest thing ever.
Some commercial, I think.
But
I
he's got, it is. It's a commercial for trucks or Jeeps. But he's also doing a tour, and he released an album. And it is it is exactly what you would probably expect from an album released by Jeremy Renner.
That song is
sponsored
sure.
by sponsored by Jeep. It sounds, I mean, it's fine. It's fine. But 9 times out of 10 when an actor says I'm a musician, mm-hmm.
It's Bruce
more,
Willis.
It's more 30 odd foot of grunt than it is.
Yeah.
You know, 30 Seconds to Mars.
It's more Dog Star.
Right, right.
I mean, Johnny Depp goes around and plays with fucking Slash and
yeah.
somebody else and calls himself.
He's touring with Alice Cooper and Joe Perry, I think, from Aerosmith.
But I don't know. I've never heard his music. Is it any good?
He's good. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. My guess is the Dog Stars and the 30-odd foot of grunts of the world and all that are people who are like, eh, we're going to do this, and they don't get producers or anything like that. But Jeremy Renner wants to go and do something. He probably found some producers.
He's got some Marvel money stashed away. I bet he could do the I remember about 15, 20 years ago, Kevin Bacon and his brother put out an album. The Bacon Brothers.
They're,
you know what?
They're very,
it wasn't bad.
It wasn't
no,
bad.
They're critically well-received.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. Steve Martin is a next-level mm-hmm. banjo player.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know see,
Russell Crowe, not so much.
I'm not sure I'm going to be buying on the Jeremy Renner musical career until I hear more. We should at least do some intentional talking of some kind. We're good at meandering, though. Mm-hmm. It's fun.
Yes. I don't know.
Maybe just cut off the surprise?
Well, we'd have to take
the opposite of that is what I meant.
You did, like, you just ran yourself into a great joke, didn't you?
And I was there for a conference, and he took me to this place in South Philly called Tony Luke's. And, like, you think you've had Philly cheesesteak sandwiches, like, other places and everything.
Yeah.
It's the classic thing.
Yeah.
When you have it from the source, it's like an Italian beef sandwich from Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, in Chicago, it's different. And that was an orgasm and a...
I bet. I would love to have, like, an authentic thing. Philadelphia Philly cheesesteak.
You got to order quick, though, man. They're ill-tempered over there.
Yeah, I told them, I was trying to explain to my wife, because she was like, Cheese Whiz, ew. And I was like, well, that's like... There's two Philly cheesesteaks that mm-hmm. call themselves authentic. One uses Cheese Whiz and one doesn't. Uses another kind of provolone, I think. And you know, that's all. If you can, they'll give it to you without the whiz,
yeah.
but they'll make fun of you.
You got to ask for it wit. If you ask for it wit, that means you want the Cheese Whiz,
oh.
or no wit, or without, or whatever.
Without.
Well, who's surly when they give you sandwiches?
Cheesesteak man.
The cheesesteak guy. The one that I went to, Tony Luke's in South Philly, there, if you don't get your order in and like nail
what
it.
Is it with, what is it with the fucking we don't have time for this bullshit?
I don't know, man.
Apparently that was, I've never been to, what's the hot chicken? Prince's. I've never been to Prince's here, which is probably a crying shame. I just have never been able to get to it. And that's the stories that I heard about them. Like, be with it when you go up there and order, or else they start yelling at you mm-hmm. and stuff. And I'm like, why is that a thing? Why is that something that is allowed when you are competing?
Now, if it's the cheesesteak place, that, you know, they're probably one of the two original ones or whatever. They probably got a line around the building every day.
Yeah, it was a long line.
So he can probably... He doesn't need your $5 or whatever.
Sure, they don't. But at the same time, it's not like... It's not like if you spend 10 extra seconds that it's going to make any difference.
You got to figure these guys were some of the inspiration for the soup Nazi on Seinfeld. Yeah. Right? You got to say it correctly. have your money ready, slide down to the, don't fuck up the
award. And so many people are just learning about this stuff, and it's not like they know the right way when they get in and everything. You've got to be a little bit forgiving. I'm sorry.
No, I agree.
And so, like, that's why I probably would never go to an establishment like that. I mean, although, if you're going to be in a line for a long time, you should probably, by the time you get to the front.
I think that's the problem where, like, the line's been going on for a while. They've got menus. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, you know who you look like?
That
Al Pacino.
That is annoying, for sure.
You wrote something in the latest music video scenes that you said, you put in parenthesis, like Al Pacino in Devil's Advocate. And I tried to say it. And by the second one, I even say in the audio track, I sound more like Nixon than I do Al Pacino. I'm going to give up. I'm moving on.
It's vanity. It's definitely my favorite sin.
And I vanity, out, Kevin.
Yeah, see,
vanity.
I went, vanity. I was nowhere close.
There's something we should do immediately when we get home.
Is what?
Fuck.